This message comes from NPR sponsor, Hulu. Based on shocking true events, the new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, tells the story of a savage murder in a small town. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
Hi, I'm Dylan from awesome San Francisco. The Sound of Young America is an awesome independent production, awesomely supported by listeners like you and me. If you'd like to make an awesome donation to support the show, visit the awesome website, MaximumFun.org, and click on Awesome. I mean, donate.
Live on tape from my house in Los Angeles, I'm Jesse Thorne, and this is The Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org.
Radio sweetheart, on the airways, it's the sound of young America. Maximum.
It's the Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests on the program are some of the Emmy-winning writers of The Late Show with David Letterman. Bill Schecht is the show's head monologue writer. He's also a former columnist for Sports Illustrated and a novelist whose books include The Ringer. And brothers Eric and Justin Stengel are the show's co-head writers. The writers of The Letterman Show are also behind the new book collection of Late Show Fun Facts, which is appropriately titled Late Show Fun Facts. Here's Letterman sharing a few fun facts on the show.
The original creators of Superman sold their rights to the character in 1938 for $130. Wow, $130.
Boy, I bet they're sorry.
Yeah, I bet they're kicking themselves
sorry now.
Yep, absolutely. An average American teenager sends 1,742 text messages each month.
Nah, it's about
25%
right.
of the world's construction cranes are currently in Dubai.
Yeah, that
whole area.
Well, it's just
burgeoning.
Booming. Yeah, it's
they got all the money. They got all the money for dang sake.
That's where it
well,
went.
That's where the money
that's
went.
Where
right
went.
There, we're just...
All went to Dubai.
McDonald's unsuccessfully spent $90 million trying to market a dessert item called the Chicken McNugget.
I know.
Leonardo da Vinci, and there was a genius. There's a guy who ought to have a book. Leonardo da Vinci created the first electric blanket by using some cotton wool and an eel. Due to global climate change, by 2015, most hookers will be named Stormy.
Guys, welcome to the Sound of Young America.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Jesse.
So let's start with this question. Is this the job that you imagined yourself having as a kid or as a teenager?
Yes, appearing on The Sound of Young America is the job we have all talked about growing up.
And we were talking about it just today.
Once
this... It was, you know, that pretty much the dream has happened.
Once this interview is over, I am going to full retirement. I will be fishing on a lake if you need me.
And I will be preparing the bait. So we're ready to go. No, I don't think that... you know, I grew up in the 1850s, and there was, you know, maybe get a job at the Dumont Network was a goal. But no, I never thought I'd wind up on this show, and I've been here 17 years.
Eric and I grew up watching the old Dick Van Dyke Show, and we saw Dick Van Dyke would go into the city, and he'd work on a variety show. He'd sit in a room and write jokes, and it sort of freaked us out that could be a real job. And we always thought, wow, like that guy, that character on TV had it all figured out. And then as we got a little older and we discovered Late Night with David Letterman, we thought, wow, like these guys know what they're doing. And our goal actually was to one day end up here.
Bill, you said you were born in the 1850s. I know Eric and Justin that the two of you are in your late 30s, which means that you're young enough to have been young and impressionable when David Letterman hit television. Do you remember those early years of late night?
Absolutely. I mean, we would stay up late. We would set our VCRs and we would take as much time as we could
watching what happened with Dave on Late Night with David Letterman, and then we would go into school and tell all our friends about it. At first, we felt like we had discovered it, and here was a guy who had a completely different sensibility than anything that we had ever seen before, and it was silly, and it was funny, and it was smart, and wow, this is like this little nugget of gold that's on in the middle of the night, and we just could not get enough of it.
I was a stand-up comic when the show came on the air, and it was a sensation, and it was the type of show, if you were a comic, you were dying to get on, because you know, the Tonight Show was a great goal, but you know, that was pretty much the province of Kelly Monteith and Kip Adada and other people that I can't remember, and neither should you. But so my goal first was to try and get on the show as a comic, and I couldn't. So then I tried to submit. I submitted to the show as a writer 5 times and didn't get hired. And on the 6th time, well, I had some photos, and here I am.
What was different about the show?
Well, the best line that I heard about the old show, and I don't know who to attribute this to, so let's just say it's mine, was that the show on NBC celebrated failure, and you know, those were, you know, when things got screwed up, that got big laughs. You know, Dave used people on the staff, and there was just a seat of the pants quality to it.
And sure, there are similarities and elements that were in other talk shows, but, and I don't know who said this, so I'm going to say Bill Sheff did, it was an anti-talk show in that failure was hilarious, and it was not, you don't stop the show and edit it out, you just sort of ride along with it and move on to the next thing and keep talking about the bizarre thing that somebody said or dropped, or the guest who showed up drunk and wanted to fight the host, you know, you just... That sort of created the atmosphere that anything can happen.
I mean, I don't think people tune into this show necessarily to watch the show. It's not like, oh, I want to see what that guest, I don't want to see this piece of comedy. They tune in because they're fans of Dave. You know, when John McCain didn't show up a few weeks ago, and that all played out on the air, where we found him in Katie Couric's studio a few blocks down the street from us, and that happened on the air, and we kept it. The audience was discovering it along with Dave, and you know, everybody was laughing. It's all right. You're all,
yeah,
pretty
nobody
much...
wrote that. Nobody said, you know, it would be great if we got McCain to bail on the show, and then, you know, set up a camera where we showed him getting made up in front of Katie Couric. Man, would that be great?
So I don't know, but you heard it here first. This doesn't smell right. You know, this just doesn't smell right, because this is not the way a tested hero behaves. So, somebody's putting something in his Metamucil. And now we've just been told, here, take a look. Do we have it on the thing?
This is
going live. This, there he is right there.
He was imbued with a Democratic...
Doesn't seem to be racing to the airport, does he? This just gets uglier and uglier. I'm feeling bad for the man to have participated in this. I mean, first of all, the road to the White House runs right through me.
That always happens. Always happens. Always.
Plenty. It's like we caught him getting a manicure or something. We're told now that the senator has concluded his interview with Katie Couric, and he's now on Rachel Ray's show making veal piccata.
Eric and Justin, as I understand it, the two of you started your comedy writing career submitting jokes to Weekend Update on Saturday Night Live.
That's correct.
That's right. We were given the opportunity to fax in jokes to Norm, and we did it for about 8 months. Every week that there was a show, we would stay up all night the night before on like a Thursday night.
And yeah, they wanted the jokes Friday morning.
So we would gather all the papers from the week, write jokes, send them in, and we never heard anything for months and months and months and months. And one time we thought, okay, let's just call to make sure that they're getting the facts. So, I don't care if they like the jokes. Right. I just want to make sure that the transmission is received.
So either they're getting them and they don't think the jokes are funny, or we're sending it to the wrong fax machine. Right. And we're hoping, since it's been 8 months of nothing, we're sending it to the wrong fax machine. So we called Norm's assistant, and we said, hey, you know, we're the Stengel brothers. We've been sending in monologue jokes. Oh, yeah, we've been getting them. And we were like, oh, fantastic. So in our heads, we're thinking our jokes are horrible. Perfect. This is all good. This is just what we want to hear.
Yeah.
And so we kind of we hung up and we wrote one more page of jokes. That Saturday was the first time we got a joke on the air. And it was, oh, my God, that's fantastic. So I guess we sort of reminded them that we were there.
Do you remember the joke?
It was...
Yeah, it was Thursday was take your daughter to work day, or as Aaron Spelling calls it, Thursday.
Oh, that's a perfect Norm joke.
Yeah. And that's Eric great. And I made $50 that we split.
Yeah.
And which, when you're living in New York City, buys you a pack of cigarettes and a can of soda, and that's right. all we got. And we went to the this is the first professional check we had received, so we went to the copy store and we blew it up. So it's like one of those like big like, Ed McMahon checks.
Oh, that's great.
And we kept it somewhere.
Eric, Justin, how did you end up writing for The Late Show?
We were working on a show at the USA Network. We were hired by these producers. They found us, and they owned the rights to four 1970s martial arts films, and they wanted to edit them down into these little like 5-minute episodes. They called the show Chop Suey TV, and they mm-hmm. wanted us to rewrite these little bits into anything. It could have been a commercial. It could have been anything that we wanted, and Eric and I did the voices, and it aired. USA Network decided to fill their afternoons by showing repeats of The People's Court and Love Connection. And for some reason, they had live bits taking place on a set that looked like a New York City diner. And they would get pretty much a bunch of unemployed New Yorkers and seat them in this diner. And they would go up to them kind of as wraparounds and go up and say, so what did you think of Judge Wapner's decision? Which was pretty much Judge Wapner's decision from 12 years ago.
Yeah.
So it just, the whole concept made no sense. And they wanted our show to air within this show. And so we were doing all this stuff for the USA Network. And we had a manager at the time, and our manager, we were also doing a lot of remotes. We ended up shooting remotes with a comedian named Greg Fitzsimmons and Ed Lover.
Wow.
Yeah. Wait, of Ed Lover and Dr. Dre, the hosts of Yo MTV Rap?
Yeah.
There was not enough money in the USA budget for Dr. Dre.
It was a lot of.
You
Ed
can
Lover
get the
saying,
captain.
I get the feeling that maybe they started with Dr. Dre, like Dr. Dre, Dr. Dre, then went down to right. MTV Raps, Dr. Dre,
right.
and then settled for Ed Lover.
So they go to the third person on the list, sure.
Yeah. And it was pretty much Ed Lover saying, you know, I've never been to a laundromat. Let's go see what it's like. That was the whole piece. And it was
like, I'm going to spend a day pretending to be pregnant. Basically, it's everything that Tyra Banks does now on her show.
Yeah. So we did all these remotes, and we were working all these little. They kept plugging us in on different things at the USA Network. The other interesting thing, a lot of people like in Hollywood, they work in as big time studios, and you know we have our theater here, and everything's all professional. And some people, you know, work at 30 Rock. This was in the ballroom at like the Roosevelt Hotel.
Hotel Pennsylvania.
Hotel Pennsylvania.
Sure. And USA Network basically for years was just like a phone and a folding chair.
So we would show up, we'd go up in the elevator to go to work, and it would be us and like four German tourists, you know, on their way to their room. And so we're in this ballroom, and all these different shows would come in and occupy the ballroom. And so, you know, we were there, and our manager heard that Letterman, that they were looking for writers. So, you know, on a Thursday night, we stayed up and we wrote jokes all night for Norm. I think it was Wednesday night. We stayed up all night. We wrote a Letterman packet, and we made a compilation of our best remotes, and we sent it in. And pretty much 2 days later, we got hired. It was all way too simple, which even though we've been here 12 years, it makes me feel like they've made a mistake, and any day they're coming for our keys.
Right.
Eric and Justin, what was it like for you when you first started on the show?
It was scary as hell. I mean, we were assigned to work on remote shootings every Friday with Dave, and that was the scariest thing ever because you would go into the shooting day with a concept. And there would be this crew there. There was our director, Jerry Foley, and his camera people and his sound people. And there's a whole crew that you, the writer, are responsible for. And Dave's right there, and he's looking at you, and you're supposed to tell him what to say that's funny. And I'm just thinking to myself, what can I possibly tell him that's funny? He should be telling me.
Yeah.
So that was really scary. And you know, of course you end up getting through it and you end up working through the whole process with everybody and you edit the pieces together and there's no better feeling than when it comes together and it airs and it gets laughs. And then you have to go into it again the next Friday and it's just as scary.
Do you remember any of the first remotes you worked on, either for good or for ill?
I don't remember the first. I mean, we did all the remotes. We went to Japan with Biff Henderson and with Dave's mom. And Eric did most of the Super Bowl and World Series pieces and the Yankee spring training pieces. Biff Henderson's America, you know, different pieces like that. Is that pretty much? I can't think of anything else.
You know, in the city, the things that we shot with Dave would be where we would go around in a van and Dave would have a microphone. We'd all be hidden in this van and Rupert G., the deli owner, would have an earpiece and he'd be on the streets bothering people and Dave would be telling him what to say. And I'm telling you, sitting in that van and listening to what was coming out of Dave's mouth, some of the funniest things you could ever possibly imagine. You just felt like you were one of the luckiest people in the whole world.
Hi, ladies.
Ladies.
My name's Jeffrey.
My name is Jeffrey.
Or you can call me Joffrey.
But you can call me Joffrey.
Joffrey.
What do you want?
What would you want?
I would like the tomato and mozzarella focaccia sandwich, please.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to have to go across the street and get it there.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to have to go across the street to get it there.
Because they know how to make a sandwich. Because
they know how to make a sandwich.
We don't know what the hell we're doing here.
We don't know what the hell we're doing here.
We're just playing grab ass in the kitchen today.
Yeah.
Okay, girls,
okay,
everybody
girls,
thirsty?
Here's everybody the vodka. Thirsty? Here's the vodka.
Would you like some fresh ground pepper?
Would you like some fresh ground pepper?
Let me put a little fresh ground pepper on that
let me
bread.
Let put a little part. Fresh ground pepper on
no,
the bread.
Would you stop it? I'm serious.
What's the problem?
What's the problem?
It's a condiment.
This is a condiment.
You're aggravating the hell out of me. I don't want pepper on my bread, okay? I said no.
Where would you like the pepper?
Where would you like the pepper?
I don't want any right now.
All right, how about your friend?
How about your friend?
I want you to get out of my face. I want another waiter.
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
Who are you, Martha Stewart?
Who are you, Martha Stewart?
What do you want?
It was like at the old show when during rehearsal, when he would test the phone, he would make these prank calls, which you would hear during rehearsal, and they were just great. I remember one day he called the Butterball Turkey hotline and said that he had a two-headed turkey, and what were they going to do? You know, did they have any advice for – and the guy was playing along, and then the guy – asked Dave a question that he wasn't ready for, which was, what are you doing right now? And Dave, you just said, he took a split second and said, well, I'm just getting ready to go into town.
It's the Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests are Eric and Justin Stengel, head writers of The Late Show with David Letterman and monologue writer Bill Schecht. There's a new book of Late Show fun facts in stores now. We'll have more with Letterman's writers when we return in just a minute.
Production of The Sound of Young America is supported in part by Ask Metafilter. Thousands of life's little questions answered. Online at ask.metafilter.com.
The Sound of Young America is live Friday the 23rd in San Francisco. Catch interviews with punk rock legend Jello Biafra and California State Assembly member and stand-up comedian Tom Amiano, plus comedy from Sean Cullen and Casper Hauser, and a live musical performance from Zion I. It's all Friday the 23rd at Cobb's Comedy Club in North Beach. Buy your tickets now. Visit cobbscomedyclub.com or follow the ticket link from the live page on MaximumFun.org. Welcome back to The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests are the David Letterman writers Eric and Justin Stengel and monologue writer Bill Schecht.
Thank you.
For you.
What?
That's for you.
Thank you. You know, God bless you. I love you people already, you know? Thank you very much. I'm so happy you're here, and I can feel it coming right up here on stage. Here's what happened. Last night, horrible audience. And I hate talking about people when they're not here, but weren't they awful, Paul?
I'm telling you.
Halfway during the show, here's how bad the audience was. Halfway during the show, I crash-landed a plane and sped away on a motorcycle.
That's not bad.
Awful. I couldn't...
Bill, you're the head monologue writer.
I was. I did that for a long time. Steve Young has that job now, and I'm just back to being a writer and grateful for it. That was a good gig for a while. I had that for about 11 years.
Tell me a little bit about what you do when you're writing the monologue for a program. What's your day like?
Well, come to. Then I have coffee and six Vicodin, and then the shower. After you've done this for a while, you don't have to read a million papers. You're just, especially now with the internet, you're aware of what the big stories are, you're just trying to do as many takes on the big stories as you can, because the thing about a monologue is you're not in the education business and you don't have that much time. So you really have to talk about things that people know about. And Dave told me when I started the show, I said to him, can you give me any advice? This is the only thing he ever told me. He said, I don't care how good the joke is. It can't be longer than four lines, because if it's longer than four lines, it won't fit on a cue card. And if it doesn't fit on a cue card, I can't do it. And so it's just this shorthand.
What are the particular opportunities and challenges of writing specifically for this show? What kinds of jokes can you write or can you not write that are different from if you were writing the monologue for... for Jay Leno or for Conan O'Brien or any other, topical monologist?
Well, look, I think that anybody that does a monologue wants to do the joke that nobody else is doing. But I just feel like that is more the case with Dave. And I think that permeates through the whole show. He doesn't want people to hear or see anything that they might hear or see on another show. Specifically, with Dave, you try and get the word stevedore in a joke as much as possible. Specifically.
You're learning a lot today about us, aren't you?
Who knew? Yeah. I had no idea.
A lot of people don't.
Are there jokes that you think of that just don't work for this context?
Oh, I could have, like a four-hour HBO special of jokes that don't work. I think that any... they're lying if they tell you otherwise, but, the thing about a monologue writing is that your business basically is writing a lot of jokes that don't work and trying to find the jokes that work in there. Look, if you write 50 jokes a day, like, for instance, on a good day, he'll take 10... and he'll do five. He'll put 10 on cards to consider, and he'll do five. And like I have to tell you, not every day is a good day. But the thing is that the 40 that he didn't take, you're still... You just have to make... And this is with every other aspect of the show. We just make mounds and mounds of coleslaw.
Not literally. Everybody calm down.
Not literally either. But, we try and sift the best stuff out of that. It's just a volume business.
Yeah.
Cold, isn't it, ladies and gentlemen? Don't kid yourselves. It's cold. Here's how cold it is. So cold today, people were throwing shoes at Al Gore.
Whoa.
And people are always coming up to me on the street and they say, Regis, do you have any cold weather tips? Here's a cold weather tip. This thing is surefire. You take your, before you leave the house in the morning, take your boxer shorts, put them in the microwave. Honest to God, it works great.
Really?
It's a little little tip that I learned from Rosie O'Donnell.
Ah!
And it works great. Good. So cold here in New York, there's a new Broadway musical, Annie, Get Your Chapstick.
That's
yeah. It's so cold today in New York City. You know the guy in the divorce case who wants his kidney back?
Yeah.
Are you aware of this? A guy and his wife get married, and she says, I'm going to need a kidney. And he says, fine. He gives her a kidney. Now they get divorced, and he wants it back. The guy wants his kidney back. Well, it was so cold today, he also wants his sweater back. That's how cold it is. No, wait a minute.
Eric and Justin, I want to ask you a similar question to what I started in with Bill there, which is, what is your day like? What do you do?
Well, we have about 7 writers upstairs who work on the comedy for the show. That means the little extras, commercial parodies, things that we do, the little live comedy bits and the top 10. And everybody comes in and goes to a meeting and throws around ideas based on the topics of the day. People will help shape scripts, help shape some pitches for Justin and me. And once we get those pitches, we'll check off maybe 8 or 9 comedy pieces, videotaped and live, for these guys to start working on. And they'll start. It's a mad dash to get to the show. We tape our shows at 4:30 now. And so these guys come up with ideas at 9. They'll have it scripted up and in production by 11, and we rehearse at 2 o'clock. And so the goal really is to get these things, you know, these 30-second commercial parodies voiced and edited by 3 o'clock. So if there are changes that need to be made, they can get back into the edit room. We happen to have some very talented editors here and ADs that can get these things in and get these things out. It really is like a factory.
And all at the same time, where we've picked that day's top 10, and the writers are writing the top 10 all day. And Eric and I put the list together, send it down to Dave. Dave will add some of his own jokes. He'll cut jokes. He'll rewrite jokes. And we're working the top 10 right when the show starts. We're in Dave's dressing room about an hour before the show, and we're showing him all the pieces that we've prepared. And Dave, you know, I like this. I don't like this. Can we make this change? And we're making changes right up to showtime, and then the show goes on, and the writers are watching in the conference room on the writers' floor. Eric and I are on the floor with Dave, and we're trying to keep anything that comes up organically. We're trying to keep that going. So if someone in the audience says something to Dave or holds something up, Eric and I will try and think of other jokes or other ways to keep it going.
This week, Dave mentioned that he wanted to be considered for Hillary Clinton's Senate seat, and so he came up with a little slogan for himself that, you know, I'm Dave Letterman, and I'll be taking care of business.
Yeah.
So Justin called upstairs to the graphics department and said, okay, we need a campaign button. It says Dave Letterman, taking care of business, and we need it now.
And he has to be able to attach it to his jacket. So within about 10 minutes, an intern ran down what looked like a political button, Dave's photo, Dave's motto underneath it, and double-sided tape on the back. During the next commercial, I ran up to the desk, and I said, you know how you know everything you just said in your motto? He said, yes. I said, here's your campaign button. And Dave looked at it, smiled. We told the director, and then, you know, Dave had the option to then take it, put it on his lapel, and, you know, we get the shot. And it's something that came up during the show. Nobody, you know, thought of it ahead of time. And then, of course, the audience will react. They'll laugh because they'll realize, oh, my God, that just happened. Oh, it's like all happening in front of me. It's fabulous.
Right. And in addition to all of this that they described, they're also considering the future shows. There are big pieces, big prop pieces that we do that need to be prepared weeks in advance. So it's not only like putting out a newspaper every day, but it's like putting out a newspaper, a weekly magazine, and a monthly magazine every day, because you have to be that far ahead. So it just can't be that day's show. It's incredibly intricate.
Yep.
Like any show, The Late Show has these structured and regular moments for jokes, the monologue and the top 10 list. And I think like a lot of people who are big fans of David Letterman, I always look forward to some of the more surreal and bizarre moments that still populate the show. I've been thinking a lot lately, probably too much, about a bit called How Many Spider-Mans Fit in a Jamba Juice?
Right.
Where does something as...
Well, we really don't have time to deal with what that reflects in you, that you've been thinking about that a lot. We really don't have that much time.
It's one of those things that just gets in there and won't come out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, not a good place to go. Does not speak well of you.
So what we're going to do tonight, we're going to see how many guys dressed as Spider-Man we can get into a Jamba Juice, juice restaurant. Now, this Jamba Juice, there's one on virtually every street corner in New York City. All right, are we ready? Let's send in a Spider-Man. There he is. Nice job. All right, there's our first Spider-Man. So far, nothing. Nobody cares. All right, let's try another Spider-Man. All right, two. Now, there's some discussion going on behind them, but so far, everything's still... Uh-oh, a call is being made. A call is being made. Let's see what happens next. All right, send in three Spider-Men, please. Three more. Go. All right, send in the remaining nine Spider-Men. Here we go. Nobody seems to care. All right, so we're out of Spider-Man suits, is that correct? All right, send in Superman.
We had every costume in the city. The one of the, I guess Spider-Man 3 had just come out, and everybody wanted a Spider-Man costume, and we were only able to get like 15. And we wanted to fill the Jamba Juice. We wanted to just pack it with people, and we can only get 15. And we said, well, what else you got? We got a clown.
Yeah.
We got two lizards and an alien and
we
a Dracula.
We got Moses.
Got Moses.
Moses. Yeah.
Send it over. That's perfect.
Yeah. But the thing about that bit is that that piece began years before very simply as it was just like how many people can you fit into an H&R Block? And it was just regular people that worked on the staff, or it was – I can't remember what the first one was.
I think it was Easter Bunnies.
I think it was Easter Bunnies.
But was it always people in costumes, or was it – originally it was just people, and when we had the –
Before that.
And the way these bits evolve, it's, okay, well, that looks good, and how can we make it even weirder, and how can we make it even more, as Dave says, of a sociological experiment?
Yeah. Right, and the hope is always that the – people inside of the Jamba Juice or the H&R Block or whatever it is will first be confused and then be pissed off and then call their attorneys.
Right. Yeah. That's the goal.
That's the goal. If you see the police arrive, we've done our job.
Yeah.
So the question remains, where does this come from? When the standbys of the show are things like, will it float, in which something is dropped into a tank, or throwing something off of something. Is there a meeting where, the once a week thinking of very, very strange things meeting?
Yes, yeah. Actually, that should be going on right now, but we're recording your show. Thank you very much. There'll be none of it next week. Thank you.
Yeah, the writers will all come up with ideas, and we'll try to think of stuff that seems funny and odd and weird and different, and then we'll pitch it to Dave and we'll try it. We'll sometimes rehearse it and see if it actually works, if it doesn't work, and hopefully it makes it on the air.
Were there any notable failures in that department?
I don't know if we have enough time.
Actually, that kind of brings up a funny story. One of those remote days that I mentioned earlier, Justin and I had shot something. I can't remember what the idea. It was Dave and Paul, they grab their skateboards and run out to 53rd Street. And then we have these people that are Dave and Paul doubles that do all kinds of extreme sports. And they're doing jumping and ramps and all this stuff. And it looked cool. But once we edited the piece together, there was some question as to whether or not it was funny. Is it just interesting to look at, or was it funny? And Justin said, I think it's funny. And Dave said, I don't think it's funny, and I'll bet you it doesn't get a laugh.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's the perfect reason to put it up. So it went up that night, and I don't think it did great, but it didn't tank. And, of course, Justin walks up to the desk, and Dave says, you owe me money.
He used to bet on the monologue, too. You bet on jokes in the monologue with me. Yeah, that's a bit, this makes me think of this story. At NBC, they used to air the remotes on Friday. So on Thursday, they would show them to the Thursday audience before the taping, and they would judge how the audience reacted and maybe make some tweaks and then show it on Friday. So they would like screen it for the Thursday audience. And there was one that we did, which was Dave Cures Paul of the Hiccups. And it was this montage of all the things that Dave would do to try to cure Paul of the Hiccups. So Bill Wendell, the old announcer, is introducing the remote to the studio audience on Thursday, and he says, we have a little video we want to show you that's going to be on the future show. Let's see what happens when Dave has a toothache. Which wasn't the thing at all, and the audience just stared like, what's Paul, there's something wrong with, and it absolutely died.
What's the greatest pleasure of working on the show?
You know, I've written for a lot of people and in various colors in the talent spectrum. And, you know, Dave is a guy that you aspire to. And you know, there aren't many people like that. And that's what's satisfying.
Eric and I have been here 12 years. A lot of the writers have come through here. People have been head writer for 1 or 2 years. The writers will come in here for 1 or 2 years. They'll move on to sitcoms and, you know, try and get their own show. And the reason why Eric and I have stayed here, it's all because we enjoy working with Dave. I mean, we love working with our director, Jerry Foley. The writers are great. You know, we have a great crew, great staff. We're very lucky to be working with the people that we're working with. But at the end of the day, we like working with Dave. Dave's, he's a legend.
Eric, Justin, Bill, thank you so much for taking the time to be on The Sound of Young America.
Thank you very much.
It was a lot of fun.
Eric and Justin Stengel and Bill Schefter, writers for The Late Show with David Letterman. They're also among the writers of the brand new book collection of Late Show Fun Facts, which is called Late Show Fun Facts. Thanks again, guys. That's our time for another Sound of Young America program. I've been your host, Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart. The show produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our theme music written and performed by Dan Grayson with help from myself. Interstitial music provided by Dan Wally. The show edited by Nick White, our intern, Brian Fernandez. You can find us online at MaximumFun.org, where you can check out, besides just the podcast, our awesome blog, our other podcasts like Jordan Jesse Go, and all kinds of other cool stuff. You can also follow me on Twitter. It's twitter.com/youngamerican. We'll see you next week on The Sound of Young America.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.
This message comes from Schwab. It's easy to invest in ideas you believe in with Schwab Investing Themes, like online music and videos, artificial intelligence, and electric vehicles. Choose from over 40 customizable themes. More at schwab.com.
Last year, over 20,000 people joined the Body Electric study to change their sedentary, screen-filled lives. And guess what?
We saw amazing effects.
Now you can try NPR's Body Electric Challenge yourself. Listen to updated and new episodes wherever you get your podcasts.